understand more, reach farther, think critically, ask questions, and do it all with a smile. The Kovacs Perspective. Get inspired and be informed with host Steve Kovacs, because the truth doesn't always have to be so serious. Tonight's guest walked into the wilderness to research and write his then-current book on wildlife, only to come out of the bushes having been named Cosmos Bachelor of the Month. The ride only got crazier from there. He's here to tell us all about his surreal experience, so stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages. The real threats don't care what you wear, or whether you came from a nightclub or church. The real threats are the ones who prey on those who appear vulnerable. Learn what you need to know to avoid becoming a victim. Protect yourself. The Simple Keys Women Need to Be Safe and Secure is written by Steve Kovacs, martial arts expert, 3-time violent crime survivor, and former law enforcement supervisor. Learn how to live a safer, empowered life. Protect yourself. The Simple Keys Women Need to Be Safe and Secure. Available now through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You just started a new business. You know you need an online presence, so you talk to some people. Build your own website, they said. It'll be fun, they said. And easy. Well, if they were wrong, and you're tired of pulling out your hair, talk to us. At woodlandwebs.com, we know you don't have time for this. Woodlandwebs.com. Check out our pricing page for special discounts.
Welcome to the Kovacs Perspective, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Steve Kovacs, your host. Our show today has to do with outdoor trekking, which is something I really have never done. I'm kind of a wussy when it comes to that. But it has to do with outdoor trekking, being a Cosmo Bachelor, getting all kinds of letters from women to please take me, date me, that kind of thing. And then perhaps some deep conversations about perhaps the meaning of life and contentment. All of this together with one guest. Let me introduce today's guest, Michael Modzelewski. How you doing, Mike?
Great. Thank you for having me on. It's an absolute honor.
Well, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, before we went on air, and I told this story to Mike, I've got to tell everybody else. Mike's uncle and father were NFL football players, big time. And I'm from northeastern Ohio, the Cleveland area, and they were both with the Cleveland Browns for a period of time, one for a real long, many years. And they were like rock stars out here. And when I saw Mike's name, it's spelt really unique, ladies and gentlemen. I'm looking at it, I'm going, well, this is a tough name to pronounce. And I immediately, unconsciously, pronounced it. I said, Mike Modzelewski. And I said, well, how did I know that? And I remember back way, way long ago that your uncle especially Dick Modzelewski was a big star here, the one that I remember at least. And Mike, that is so cool that I'm talking to somebody that when I was a little kid, really little, your dad and uncle were big time stars here in Cleveland. That's very cool.
You know, and my dad actually launched my career as a writer because the first story I ever got published and paid for was about my father losing his job to Jim Brown.
Your father lost his job to Jim Brown?
Yeah, my dad, his rookie year, he started with Cleveland and did quite well with Otto Graham and Paul Brown and that whole, you know, back in the day era.
Sure.
And then one day he came home, and whenever he had something serious to say to my mother, they closed the bedroom door. And of course, we suction cupped our ears, the kids, you know, to listen. And he said, Mary, I better go into the restaurant business. There's a rookie from Syracuse named Jim Brown, and this guy is going to be Superman.
Wow.
He says, I'm going to feel like the guy that played behind Babe Ruth, you know.
Oh, my God. Now, how long was your dad there before Jim Brown?
He was there 7 years.
Okay.
And when he gracefully retired, he actually player coached Jim Brown, whispered the plays in his ears.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Paul Brown required some pretty smart players.
Okay.
And so I wrote this story from a child's point of view. you know, very, very young, seeing my dad getting beat up on television by 11 men in these funny suits. And he'd come home with stitches in his lip and his shoulder drooping lower than the other one. And I go, "Dad, who beat you up?" And he said, "Oh, I just went to work." And I said, "Yeah, but my buddies have fathers have jobs in the neighborhood, and they don't come home looking like you."
What a great story. I'll tell you, I mean, actually, it's a privilege to be talking to you, because the Browns were a rock star team back in those days. They were really one of the premier teams, and that was, I believe, the last time in that era, right, Mike, that they won a championship.
Yeah, and then Uncle Dick was the New York Giants when they won championships with Sam Huff and Gifford and all those glory years, and then he got traded to Cleveland in 1964. And I think they beat the Colts in the NFL championship. And so that was the last time Cleveland, you know, had won the championship then, when Uncle Dick got traded.
Oh, fantastic. It's really very nice to be talking to somebody that brings back memories to me from your relatives when I was a real little kid. And I think that's so cool. So, hey, now let me get to you, though. Now, you've got a book out now, and I think you have some other books out, too. But the book that we're going to talk a little bit more about today, The Misadventures of a Cosmo Bachelor. Now, let me get this right. You were, and I've seen a picture, you're a big, strong guy, and you're Mr. Good Looking. At least I'm not really good at gauging men's good looks, but you look like you're a real good looking guy. And you were going on the track of being a football player yourself, right? Didn't you go to college? But you kind of dropped out, and then you dropped out, and then you went to like in some crazy island. I'm sorry to use the term crazy. Well, no people, no women, just like hawks and bear and moose. Am I right so far? Your life?
Yeah.
Why did you do that? What happened? You went to college. Your relatives, your father, your uncle, big time NFL players. You're probably on the cusp of that yourself, and then you're in college, and you go, "I don't like this." What happened there, Mike?
Well, my dad, he's my hero, and he unfortunately passed away this last year. And you know, he's always alive. Death is just taking the coat off the body, you know, but his energy is with me forever. Mm-hmm. And he would come home and he would say to the kids, "The only four-letter word I don't want to hear in this house is can't." Wow. You can do anything in life. Mm-hmm. And he just was such a positive force. And he never wanted me to be him. I didn't have to play football. I didn't have to go down the road that he went. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed the game, St. Joe's, you know, Vikings in Cleveland, and went on football scholarship. But then I tore my knee up as a wide receiver, couldn't make the cut side to side. And I was always interested just as much in writing and communications as in athletics. Mm-hmm. So I became, you know, I studied journalism and communications, came out, traveled the world, starved to death in between, you know, newspaper assignments and so I was ready to write my first book, and I was always in love with nature, whether it was the park system in Cleveland playing in the ravine behind the house.
Mike, let me stop you. How old were you when you grew up in Cleveland?
I was there I was actually born in Pennsylvania, and then I went to elementary school, high school, Cleveland, and then left when I was 18.
So what school did you go to in Cleveland?
Elementary school?
Yeah, elementary.
Yeah, St. Margaret Mary.
Oh, my God. Nun. You know how close that was? I went to St. Benedict's, which was right down the road.
Oh, my goodness.
And you were at St. Margaret's on 116th Street near Buckeye Road, right?
Yeah.
What a small
So, you know, we had the nuns, and then I went to St. Joe's where we had the Marianist brothers, and of course the sister school was the Little Angela Angels, and they were anything but that. And they were 2 miles down the road, you know.
Excellent. I just had to bring that up because when you said the ravine behind your house just reminded me of kind of Cleveland. All right, so you did all this, and then you hurt your knee, right? That was the big thing?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I was a pretty decent player, I guess, in all these football preview magazines. They were saying, "Here comes another Modzelewski," and all of that. But thank goodness I had the passion in life, and that was being a writer. And that was largely due to my mother, because when I was a kid, she would read me to sleep every single night with, like, Grimm's Fairy Tales, King Arthur. And one night she picked up a book called Call of the Wild by Jack London. Mm-hmm. And that just resonated with me, like, you know, the Alaska experience and really living on the edge. And
wow.
Later, that dream came true. because I was author, sort of a journalist in search of, you know, writing my first book. Mm-hmm. And then I bumped into, I really believe there's angels on earth. They might not have wings, mm-hmm. but people come into our life and they connect us to our life path or introduce us to a life partner or a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 1,000, I was a ski bum in Aspen, Colorado when I came out of Indiana University where I transferred to journalism school. And I'm living in Aspen just skiing and climbing mountains. And I go to a design conference. There's 1,000 people, attendees at a lunch break. And we're all spinning around in a meadow watching hang gliders come off the top of Ajax Mountain to land at our feet. And I bumped into a back. Why didn't I bump the back, you know, a foot to the right or to the left? Mm-hmm. I bumped into the back of a beautiful woman from British Columbia, Canada, Vancouver. She was an architect. We fell in love. And a letter a day from Jean-Vierre saying, come and visit, come see me. I'd never been west of Colorado. I stuck out my thumb, hitchhiked all the way to L.A., all the way up the West Coast, spent 2 weeks on her sailboat going up the Inside Passage where I am right now, mm-hmm. all the way to Juneau, Alaska. Killer whales escorting the boat. Black bears pulling salmon out of the river, eagles sitting in trees watching the bears catching fish. It just is paradise up here.
Now, Mike,
so she eventually introduced me to the man that owned this island, and he had what I wanted. He had wilderness. He had adventure. He had something to write about with my heart. So by randomly bumping into that back, it's really making me believe there are no accidents in life. That we all have a blueprint and we sort of connect the dots and follow along.
Mike, let me stop you there because that's an interesting premise. And I've heard that before and I've, of course, thought that myself. Let me ask you, do you think everybody gets to bump into that back? Or do you think we sometimes have the ability to screw fate, God, or what have you, that or those angels? Do you think it's going to happen no matter what, or we can screw that up?
I think we can easily screw it up.
How?
And I think you have to know what you want in life. You have to have that clear intention. And if it's for the benefit of others, not just for yourself, I think that's part of the key, then it's like our minds are magnets, and we attract what we are. And what level we are at internally, we manifest externally. And I really believe that we direct our life movie from the inside out. And if you have purity of heart and if you're, you know, living to give, then it comes back to you in truckloads. But if it's just me, gimme, 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 then it breaks the energy.
Interesting. Maybe, yeah, get away from ourselves. That's an interesting point. Now, were you married when you went to this island?
When I met Jean-Vierre, I couldn't continue the relationship because the island was so much 200 miles north above Vancouver. So this woman that I bumped into randomly basically gave me my whole life. She gave me my future by making the connection with introducing me to the man that owned that island. So every New Year's Eve, I try to email her or call her and thank her for giving me my future, you know.
So, okay, so you guys just parted ways.
Yeah, we couldn't really continue the relationship. She came to visit, you know, a couple times on the island, okay. But it was hard to keep up because you can't communicate out there. You know, you're just way out in the wilderness and nearest neighbor's 12 miles away and no internet, phone, or, you know.
How old were you How old were you when you were on that island?
When I first went to the island, I was about, I think I was about 26 years old.
Okay.
And I first did for 2 years, like without leaving. That was my intense period of solitude. And, you know, I almost died about 5 times a day because I had no experience. I mean, you know, a kid from Cleveland and I can't. Maybe twice in my life. So I was so in over my head. Nothing on the resume. Unlike the TV show Survivor, there was nobody else out there on that island to vote you off and send you home. You know?
Wow. And then what happened? Something happened, right? When you came off the island, or how did Cosmopolitan and you get involved? And a dessert.
Well, I just say, you know, it's totally La Vida Loca. Just crazy life because here I am living on the island. And I'm writing a book about the experiences as I'm going along, you know, kayaking with a killer whale, sharing a blackberry bush with a wild bear. And it just was so magical, I had to write it down. And I didn't know the publishing system. I didn't know, you know, you need an agent to get inside the castle walls and all that. So I wrote this book, and just, you know, ignorance is bliss. I mailed it to HarperCollins in New York City, which is one of the biggest publishers in the world. And it's funny, they have a slush pile of manuscripts that come in unsolicited, probably as tall as Mount Everest. And there was an editor with a Polish last name. And he's walking by the pile looking for something to read while he's eating a sandwich at his desk for lunch. And he sees that long Polish last name. He plucks the manuscript out of the pile. And that's how I got published there.
Makes you wonder. It's almost one of those moments like bumping into that back on that,
yeah,
on that mountain.
It's another dot. And then I had to leave the island, you know, come back to civilization. And for reasons I'll never figure out, Cosmopolitan goes into 100 countries around the world, 87 languages. And every month they have a single guy in there, and they put his mug, his picture, and, you know, a way to contact him. So I came back to do publicity for the book, and I had 5,000 letters in mailbags waiting from women all over the world. So I went from famine to feast, no dates on that island for 2 years. And then it was like, you know, the master of the universe said, hey, kid, walk into the female candy shop. The lids are off all the jars.
Oh, my God.
Help yourself to as many flavors for as long as you want.
And what did you learn about women, if anything?
Oh, my God. Well, my agent at the time, he said, dude, Sigmund Freud once asked what the women really want. You got a shot at finding out. He said, take notes. And he said, why don't you study these women like you studied the wildlife in Alaska? Like, leave your emotions out of it. Try to do it as a scientist, rational. Well, that went out the window on the first date.
emotions just took over a little bit, huh, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, but it was every man's fantasy. Even Big Mo, my dad, called me up and he said, hey, when you come over to Arizona for Christmas, when the girls are all cooking in the kitchen, bring some of those letters in a duffel bag, and me and your brothers will sit on the garage and let us have a look. You know?
How funny. So you started dating, and you're doing publicity, and then where did your life go? I mean, what were you doing? I mean, is that it, dating and publicity?
Well, you know, there's a chapter in the book. It's called Sugar Shock, because I got to a point where if you're eating dessert, you know, the sweet stuff for every meal, you get to a point where you just overload it. Mm-hmm. And I just felt I wanted finally to meet somebody I could share some substance and depth with. Not that the girls weren't interesting. I did have some deep moments, but I just wasn't paying my bills. I wasn't getting any writing I worked on. And mm-hmm. I kind of reached that stage where, you know, I don't know if you want to say settle down, because I don't think I'll ever settle down, but I just wanted more depth. And I dated my way down, you know, through the years in the 90s when this happened. And finally, you know, I got to the bottom of the third mailbag, and there was a letter that was a resume of success. And it was so impressive. I said, I'm going to marry this girl before I even met her.
Wow. And did you?
Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing is she's of Swedish descent. So she loves cold weather, handles Alaska, but she's also from Akron, Ohio, just down the road.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it is just down the road.
So there's something about being from the Midwest. There's just, I think when you're a kid and you come up in Cleveland or Ohio, Michigan, those kind of places, you have a sort of a set of values.
How interesting.
You know, and it's just, we often comment on that, my wife and I, that we can always tell if somebody's from Chicago or Cleveland because you can kind of take their handshake to the bank. You know?
Now, Mike, that's an interesting point, and I think it really talks about your character that you're even thinking about that. Why do you think that is different than somebody in California or perhaps Florida? Do you think it's because the Midwest is more, I mean, it's been around for a long time, and I don't mean physically. I just, America, that's where folks came to almost from the get-go. I guess they came to the East Coast, New York, and the colonies in that area. But the Midwest have the Polish, Hungarians, Italians. I mean, hardworking. What do you think it is? I'm just grasping.
I think you hit on it. I think it's when those immigrant families are there, they realize in the parents instill those values and the value of working hard and, taking life serious and getting ahead and thinking of others and
Very interesting.
You know, you have that, not that you can't have that value system in New York City, Miami, LA, or whatever, but there are just so many more temptations in those big cities, and kids get distracted. But I think in the Midwest, you know, you just have those core values that carry you a long way in life.
Yeah, well, very interesting, and I'm glad we kind of touched on that. But I want to find out, so do you still go back to this island?
Yes, I pick my moments now. Mm-hmm. Because instead of staying there 2 years continuously, which was good to write the book, mm-hmm. like now I know when to go back there, when the killer whales are feeding on herring, you know, when the northern lights are popping out in the sky in the winter. Mm-hmm. So now it's more of a condensed version.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, the craziest thing is I'm sitting on a cruise ship right now in Ketchikan, Alaska, and for 5 months I'm the guest speaker in The Naturalist, and get to share all the stories that I've learned on the island, traveling all over the Inside Passage in Alaska with people that come on this cruise. We leave out of Seattle every Saturday from all 50 states each week in 30 different countries from around the world, coming up here to see the glaciers and the wildlife.
And that's what you do now.
Yeah, and part of the itinerary, we go right by the island that I lived on. So it's like, talk about the dots connecting into a circle.
And Mike, where, how can people, if they want to hop up on that cruise, they want to join you, they're listening to your flavor of what you're talking about, how would they do that?
Well, they could see pictures or the writings and the experience on my website, michaelmodzelewski.com, or they could just simply go to princess.com, Princess okay. Cruises.
Okay.
And it's life-changing. I mean, people, and we get about 50 Clevelanders every week. Because
wow.
My first program, when I'm in the Princess Theater and I tell people who I am, and my dad played football for the Browns,
sure.
And there's this big cheer, you know, from the Cleveland contingency up here.
I love it. And ladies and gentlemen, it's michaelmodzelewski.com. Let me spell that to you, because for me it comes naturally because I heard it all the time when I was a little babe, but for most people probably not. So let me spell it. It's M-O-D-Z-E-L. E-W-S-K-I. So it's Michael, and the last name is M-O-D-Z-E-L-E-W-S-K-I, michaelmodzelewski.com. And the book we're going to talk about a little bit right now, The Misadventures of a Cosmo Bachelor. If somebody picks that up, Mike, what are they going to get out of it? What are they going to learn? What are they going to, what's it about?
Well, it's really about a young man's quest to learn about the difference between lust and love. And all the lessons that women, to me, women are goddesses. Each and every woman, whether it's your mother, whether it's your sister, whether it's, you know, a woman that you're dating. I honor all women on this earth because I have learned so much from them. And in many ways, I think that they could very well be much smarter than we men.
I wouldn't doubt that. I actually believe that. They might not have the big mouth that some men have. Maybe me too at times. I hope not, but perhaps they sometimes keep it more to themselves. But I wouldn't doubt that they're smarter. I'm going to put you on the spot here. I'm going to ask you, and I bet you no one's asked you this. So, but you got to remember, it's a Cleveland thing. I think, Mike, that I kind of lose my mind every now and then. I'm going to ask you to give me the wildest story that you can tell me about an animal. And the wildest story, I don't care if it's X-rated or whatever, about a woman during the Cosmo days. Now, you may be on the spot. Maybe you don't want to talk on air. You don't want to talk where your wife will hear it. But I'm still going to be that bad guy and put you on the spot. What's the wildest animal story you could tell me? And we only have about 8 minutes left.
Well, wildest animal story was in the fall up here, we have 7 different types of wild berries that are sweeter than candy. And I was going to the crown or high point of my island, and I had a bucket. And the plan was, okay, I'm going to fill this bucket up with like 500 blackberries and then throw them in the pancakes. Well, they all went into my stomach because they're too damn good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're warmed up by the sun. They have dew on them. So here I am at this huge blackberry bush at the top of the island. And, you know, for every one I put in the pot, I put 10 in my mouth. But the other side of the bush, it was about 20 yards across, this giant blackberry bush. And the other side of the bush started shaking. And I go, that's not a bird landing on a twig or whatever. That's something big over there.
Mm.
And I stood up on my tiptoes, and a black bear big, fat, glossy bear.
Oh, boy.
Stood up on his upright, and we looked at each other across the blackberry bush, and we both dropped out. And I'm going, holy shit, you know, what do I do here? I mean, I'm dead. This bear could just, you know, take me out with one swat. Yeah. And I look back up, and the bear relaxed, because any animal that's going to charge you, whether it's a kitty cat at home or a dog or a horse, when they lay their ears flat, that's like a flag telling you they're coming. So when I looked at him again, he was very relaxed. The ears were forward. So I nervously reached out and started plucking berries and putting them in my mouth.
Wow.
And he dropped back down. But if I stuck my hand in my pocket or I did something where I was, you know, concealing something, then he woofed at me and he clacked his jaws.
Wow.
So I continued to pick and eat blackberries from the same bush with a wild black bear as if we were in the Garden of Eden.
That's unbelievable. Why do you think
that? People would say to me, why didn't you shoot that bear? And I go, why? Why would I shoot that bear? Because then another bear will swim onto the island and he might not be so nice.
Yeah, no, why? Yeah, so, well, that's a good point. Why would you? Yes.
The bear figured, okay, I'll share my blackberry bush. There's enough here for both of us. But the danger factor, you know, definitely kept me on edge.
Yeah, that's
but
a that's
marvelous
a heck,
experiences like that.
That's a heck of a story. That's an amazing story. Now, let's get to the nitty gritty. Can you think of one, the wildest experience on during the Cosmo days?
Well, I'll give you one that's wild and the other one that's crazy.
Okay, sounds good.
The wildest one was one of the very first dates. And, you know, when you see a movie, let's just pick an old-fashioned classic, you know, A Pretty Woman with Julia Roberts in it.
Uh-huh.
And if she's taking a shower and they do sort of a tight shot of her, you know, naked body through the smoky, you know, misty glass or whatever.
Okay.
And sometimes they'll zoom in on a certain part of the anatomy. Well, I'm not saying that Julia Roberts, you know, wouldn't be up to par, but a lot of times if actresses don't want to do nude scenes, they'll step out and a body double.
I've heard of that. Yeah. Okay. All right.
So long story short, I dated a body double who had the best butt in the business. And
that's
she
hilarious.
Made over $250,000 just stepping in for actresses in scenes like that for like 2 or 3 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Because her ass was a perfect shape of a heart. I mean, it was like flawless. And it had the gap at the top of the thighs. It was just...
Now, every man...
You could bounce quarters or batteries off of it.
Mike, every man that's listening to this hates you now. Just a little bit.
My God. I couldn't believe it, you know? And she just, you know, was dropped dead gorgeous. And when I picked her up at the airport and she walked through the airport, you just heard trays being dropped and men bouncing in the poles. And, you know, it was...
Well,
she
a great
just created
story.
This ruckus everywhere she went because she moved east to west more than north to south. You know?
Now, how did you meet her? Did she send you a letter?
She sent a letter with a picture, and you know, I mean, hey, you know, being a red-blooded male, I'm going, wow,
yeah.
A body double, you know. So,
now, what would you rather have?
That was a wild one, and then should I tell you the crazy one?
Yeah, we got a couple of minutes, please.
The phone rings, and some of these girls, even though all I had was a mailing address, email address, they would still find me. They would find my phone number. So the phone rings one Sunday night, and it's the operator going, would you accept a collect call from the Broward County Prison? And my writer curiosity goes, sure, you know, why not? So this lady comes on, and she goes, you know, you probably don't want to talk to me because I'm in jail. And I go, hey, sometimes bad things happen to good people. Sure. By the way, what are you in for? She said, third-degree murder.
Oh, boy.
And I go, whoa. But she goes, Michael, I have to tell you, I went to the exercise yard the other day, and just about every cell that I passed, this is an all-female prison, everybody had your Cosmo picture. Somebody ran it off on the copy machine. And every girl has your picture inside their cell block.
That is
like
hilarious.
You're this fantasy because you're up in the snow of Alaska and a sled dog's kissing your face. And it gets so hot and humid in this jail that it actually can rain. Water can drip off the ceiling on us. That's how hot and humid. And you're up there in the snow and, you know, the red parka on, the whole thing. And so she goes, listen. I get out of jail in a few months, and I need a boyfriend bad.
Oh, boy.
Holy mackerel.
So what did you do?
I hung up the Steve, I hung up the phone and I just said, what has my life become? You know?
Right.
In fact, my mother, you know, she's from Pittsburgh originally and, you know, lived in Cleveland most of her life. And she's Italian, you know, descent. And I don't have a mother, I have a smother. You know, her whole attitude was, don't live, you might die, you know.
Right.
On the front cover of the book, I have, you know, thank goodness, I have quotes from these great writers. Blurbs, you know, recommending a book, but the best blurb that sells the most copies is from the author's mother. And my mom says, oh my God, what did I raise?
but you didn't, first of all, that's a great story. And I'm kind of hurrying here because we only have a few minutes, but I can't just leave this. I mean, could you imagine that, ladies and gentlemen, Mike, I mean, that's just amazing, is that you have a whole cell, you had a whole cell block of women that were without men for years with your picture on the wall. That is just phenomenal. How many people can really say that? That's really cool. But you know what's, I think, more interesting, and I'm going to get a little bit more serious here, is that I think, first of all, I think your communication skills are great. And you mentioned something that I have not heard in a long time, if ever. And that's how I feel, because I write now, too, and I have in the last 10 years of my life, and I never did before. It's a form of communication. It's just like you and I are talking. Writing is communication. And I feel that you've experienced and you like something in life and more than just the shallow stuff. And I don't want to get too esoteric. I don't want to get too serious, but I do. I think, Mike, and am I wrong on this, that you look at life as a special experience and it's something to be respected, not just used.
Exactly. And I really believe that life is school. We're here to learn lessons, hopefully to graduate. And I also believe we're here to grow a soul. That, you know, we don't take the objects and possessions with us and the money when we pass on. But I think we do take the spiritual experiences. You know, what we've grown and developed inside, I think that energy lasts and it resonates through the universe.
Now, that's really interesting. And I'm going to say something here. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this or if you know somebody that's in trouble, and the reason I say that, Mike, you'll see where I'm going with this, is that we talked a little bit about Cleveland. And Cleveland's was a great city, and it's really fallen on bad times. A lot of violence and a lot of lack of hope. But Mike, what you just said, ladies and gentlemen, please listen. And if you know somebody that's lost, doesn't feel there's really any hope, there is no soul kind of thing. I just give me another, some more heroin. Give me a gun again. I'll just do what I got to do. Nothing really matters. You know, I think Michael Modjeleski may have a thing or two that might open somebody's eyes, whether you're white, black, Muslim, Christian. I think Mike's message might have a lot of meaning here. Everybody has hope. Everybody has this real, can have a passion and it can have a good life. And Mike, I think that may be your message.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to help one-on-one. If anybody is in despair or needs help, have them contact me.
MichaelModzieleski.com. MichaelModzieleski.com. Modzieleski. .com.
And Steve, I got to tell you real quick, when sure. I gave up my football scholarship, didn't want to go down that path, I loaded trucks in Cleveland, the graveyard shift, with alcoholics and drug addicts to make enough money to get myself to Europe to travel around, where I discovered, you know, I wanted to be a writer. And that was the best education beyond any school, is working with those guys that were down and out.
Yeah, I believe
you. And on tough times. And I love everybody. You know, we're all equal here. The money doesn't measure a person at all.
No, it really doesn't. And I think that's important what you just said. I mean, alcoholics are people that are down and out. You just said you learn more than in anywhere else, and that's true. So, ladies and gentlemen, guys and girls, if you're one of those people that are hopeless and you feel you're a piece of crap, you're not. You're really not. You got a lot to offer, but you got to go over this hump. So you can smile and relax a lot more. And by the way, Mike, before I let you go, I just thought of this a few minutes ago. Where you went to school, immediately where you went to school, directly across the street was my father's martial arts studio. It was the Cleveland School of Self-Defense and Karate. And
they, oh, my God.
I don't know if that rings a bell. Maybe not. Maybe you didn't see it, but it was directly across the street. And ladies and gentlemen, we did not plan this. I had no idea about Mike. I had no idea he was from Cleveland. I had no idea that he went to school directly. I mean, literally 200 feet, if that, from my father's business. And I used to go to that school when I was a little kid. And it's just, maybe it's another one of those moments, Mike, like running into that.
Well, you know,
back.
Steve, I really believe that we're blood brothers, and we both come from the same place, not just geographically, but I think spiritually as well.
How cool, Mike. It's been a real pleasure. I want to thank my producer, who's in Canada right now, for hooking us up, for finding a great guest. And ladies and gentlemen, go to Barnes & Noble, go to Amazon.com, go to MichaelMojeleski.com. Pick up this man's book. I think it could only do good. The Misadventures of a Cosmo Bachelor. Mike, I hope we get together again. It's been a pleasure, man.
Steve, thank you so much. I live to have a conversation like this deep rather than just superficial.
Fantastic. Thank you again. And again, I'm not kidding, Mike. Maybe one day I'll bump into that. You'll bump into my back one more time. So thank you very much for being my guest. Ladies and gentlemen,
thank you so much.
My pleasure. Every week, tune in. We got some good stuff. Until next time, so long.
The Kovacs Perspective is brought to you by writer and host Steve Kovacs and executive producer Rain Stickland. Get in touch with us at info@thekovacsperspective.com or through our website. If you want to be a guest on the show, go to our Be a Guest page for details. Music, unless otherwise stated, is used under Creative Commons licensing. See our website for artist attribution and licensing details.